This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
This morning we were discussing the universal recommendation or the practice of seated meditation, or the Fukan Zazengi. And among the many interesting things that Dogen says in that essay, he says, English is being used is, if you grasp the heart of Zazen, you will be like the dragon when he gains the water, or the tiger when she enters the mountains. So I wonder if any of you respond to that feeling, yes, that's absolutely right. Or maybe even more interestingly, no, that's totally wrong. Anybody? The expression's a little funny, to speak of grasping the heart of Zazen. Mostly in Buddhism, grasping is not an ideal thing. So you could also say, once you realize, that is, once it becomes a reality, that you are in the heart of Zazen, now, you will understand the point of view of the dragon or the tiger. Now, those are classical Chinese images, of course, dragons and tigers and so forth. And sometimes they're used to, it was a metaphor for the free and unhampered spirit. But maybe a little more subtly, first of all, Dogen doesn't talk that way very much. But the dragon in the water and the tiger in the mountains are in their perfect environment. And the perfect environment is indeed a place of great power. So once you realize you are in your perfect environment, your spirit can express itself freely. If you think you have to wait till you find some water or some mountains, you may be waiting a long time. So an aspect of grasping the heart of Zazen is to make real the perception that there's nothing to grasp. The heart of Zazen is, coextensive with the universe, something like that. So how are you going to grasp that? I don't know. Now this is, of course, this is the crux of the matter in Zen practice. How do you grasp the ungraspable heart? Dragons and tigers don't worry about such things. We poor sentient beings, I don't know. Life can be tough for us. Another way this has been expressed, I saw the other day that a well-known Zen figure was musing about how, I think he said, how to lead all our sisters and brothers and whoever to a state of non-duality. I was a little surprised because although I'm pretty sure I know what he meant, non-duality is not a state. So, once again, there isn't anything there to grasp. That is why in Zen, people use expressions like not one and not two. That is an evocation of non-duality. We think that non-duality means something like oneness all the time. Then we eventually will wind up disparaging multiplicity. And if we say, well, there really isn't any oneness, there's just multiple things, then we will disparage unity. So I think this Dharma exemplar was saying what his intent was, as Dogen's intent was. And using an expression like, once you grasp the heart of Zazen, Dogen would have known that that could, you know, people could trip over that. And yet, just as Shakyamuni Buddha did, he chose not to remain silent all the time. So, reality, if you'll pardon the expression, is non-dual. And if you're attentive, as you journey in this life, the inescapable truth of that will strike you from time to time. And in fact, I would say it already has many times. But you weren't quite there enough. Catch it. And it turns out that sitting in stillness and silence kind of fine tunes our spirit to respond to those, whatever they are, encounters. Where the universe as non-dual comes and taps you on the shoulder. You could be looking into the eyes of a perfect stranger. You could be listening to some music. You could be walking on the beach. There is no place where the non-dual universe isn't fully operating. So I may have just made things worse for you all by suggesting that if you, it's like if you turn around fast enough, you can see your own shadow. So you have to be prepared to be the true dragon. And you'll remember the funny story about the guy who just totally loved dragons. So he was always painting them and carving dragon statues and so forth. And in so doing, he really had the feeling that he knew exactly what a dragon was like. And it happened that at one point there was a dragon in his neighborhood who heard about this guy. And the dragon said, "Oh, I really want to meet him. Sounds like a really interesting person." So he, without much warning, appeared to the fellow who was so fond of dragons and said, "Hi." And the chap fainted dead away from the shock. So if we get worried or preoccupied about getting a glimpse, that very preoccupation will coarsen our perceptions. So the dragon has gained the water, and the tiger has entered the mountains. And that's you guys. For some reason, I just remembered that line from the Psalms. Deep is calling to deep in the roar of the waters. Same message. In Tantra practice, for instance, what's called generation stage, highest yoga tantra, Anuttara yoga tantra. At the end of visualizing oneself as the deity, for instance, Avalokiteshvara, it's said, you arise from that meditation as Avalokiteshvara. It's one of the almost universal instructions. So it would be good if we all go forth from this place as dragons and tigers. Without having to know exactly what they look like. And then, just as you've been startled by your own spirit many, many times in your life already, that will go on and on. And you will be able to be very helpful to other people. So when we come to sit, to sit in that place of actually no grasping, is to bring forth the heart of Zazen. Same essay, Fukan Sazengi Dogen says, when you arise from Zazen, do so quietly and carefully, calmly and deliberately. A And that is the same as saying, you arise as the deity. And then you, or we, can go forth into the world with a quiet heart. That's available to whoever we meet. You will be a person of the way who completely inhabits his perfect environment. That is how to be the dragon or the tiger, instead of running to catch one of them somehow. Would you like to ask some questions?
Not a question, just kind of an observation.
Mm-hmm.
I've sometimes noticed over the years that in conversation with people, especially amongst Sangha members, when I'm expressing myself basically in some of the more basic teachings and conversing, there's kind of a sense of a shared resonance with others, which I don't really know how to analyze.
That's good.
Yeah. And
that's called Sangha, by the way.
Oh, okay. And that's when I feel, especially when you were talking, I was getting hints of that same shared resonance. Mm-hmm. And I know that when I just allow myself to linger in that, it's really a nice feeling, and I can feel it with others. And then I noticed it when I get into my own particular viewpoints about all the different aspects of life that might impinge upon the basic teachings. That's when it tends to get more ego-centered and self-centered, and so on. So it's
The only thing I would caution you about, use the word linger.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say be careful about lingering. That's it's pretty much impossible. But it's easy to think we can do that, and then we might get tripped up. So that's all I would say. Thank you for your comment. Yes?
I'm probably confusing this terribly, so I apologize in advance.
No, my fault.
No. With duality?
Yes.
It's always been a struggle with me. It's not good or bad or right or wrong, whatever. But then we say something skillful, or we say something or not, or it's harmful or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds sort of like a contradiction.
What would you say is the meaning of harmful or unskillful, then, from your point of view?
Well, skillful means we define as bringing merit. And harmful would be something that would bring pain or suffering to myself or others?
Yes. Even in a slightly more technical sense, what is helpful or beneficial is whatever is conducive to liberation. And then the opposite is true. Something is harmful if it somehow, I don't know, confirms people in their state of, you know, what's that phrase? Thirsting in a swirling daze for the riches of the Dharma realm and the world. Being very confused. Now, some people, if you walked up to them and said, you know, the universe is already non-dual, they might break into a huge sunny smile and say, damn, you're right, thank you. Mostly people probably won't do that. They will, you know, see if you have a clipboard and you're trying to get them to sign up for something. Other than that, they will try to escape from you.
I tried explaining that to friends.
Yeah,
quickly.
It's better to experience rather than to explain. So that's why I said, you can just, two people looking in each other's eyes completely evokes non-duality. Mm-hmm. Especially if you let the habitual chatter kind of die away. Anyway, if I confused you more, I'm sorry.
No, thank you, that helps. It's something I definitely can feel, but I can't, when I try to logically process it, I can't.
Yeah.
Well, I think Jim touches on, like, as he was speaking, it made me think of everything that feels good isn't necessarily good for a person, you know. And everything that is momentarily hurtful isn't necessarily harmful. There's a lot of...
Right. Well, everyone who says he's your friend isn't necessarily your friend. Mm-hmm. So that's our world. Did you have a question or comment?
So, thank you. I haven't been here in a while, and your words were
confusing.
I don't know. You brought me to this place of experience where there was, as we say, non-dual feeling. Mm. And I thought it was interesting how you commented on whoever that was that says our job is to lead people to a state of non-duality. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing, to me anyway, is it's like in each moment we are in a different state of consciousness. And I guess that's what he's saying. But when you went on to express, you know, that non-duality is always there, mm-hmm. that somehow relieves me of even trying to get to that state.
Well, and in fact, that may be what this fellow meant by leading people to a state where non-duality is not a state. I'm sure he and I could come to some understanding if we were to speak together.
Sure.
Any other comments today? The complaint department is open, so please, if you wish.
Really complain about that? Yeah. I read this morning that Voltaire said that religion began when the first scoundrel met the first fool. And I was just hoping that someone who was there at the time said to him, so which one are you?
Yeah. I'll have to remember that one. Well, we have tea and cookies for you upstairs, so. I remember once the second abbot of Zen Center was having a question and answer, and he drank some tea and said, "Oh, the tea just drank me." It's the same thing I was talking about. Thank you very much.